This is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Do we have any audio on these heroin death sites meetings at the Seattle City Council today? Do you know?
Not yet.
Not yet. We're working on it.
No, we've got so many things going on today.
I just got a PowerPoint. I just got the PowerPoint for the heroin death sites. So what's the detail that our tipster sent us? They're going to have how many new employees at this thing? Oh, you have to go back.
Yeah,
I didn't
sorry.
Tell Nicole I was going to ask. Nicole just sent me some from our tipster. So to operate these heroin death sites, they're going to have to add 14 new employees. An annual cost of is around, what, $2.5 million?
Yeah, 2.3.
$2.3 million. So we would have to add 14 new bureaucrats at an average cost of $164,000 a year to operate these heroin death sites where people can go and inject poison into their veins under the watchful eye of government. I'm paraphrasing because that's not how it was phrased in the PowerPoint.
I'm trying to absorb all this. They're bureaucrats who work at these heroin death sites.
I mean, making $164,000 on average each.
You're trying to say that none of them would have like medical expertise?
I have no idea. I cannot imagine somebody who's ever taken the Hippocratic Oath is going to sit and watch somebody inject heroin into their veins. I don't understand any of this, but they're talking about, and what's their line for these things? They don't call them heroin death sites.
Safe injection sites.
No, they don't even call them that anymore. It's like, they call it a mobile safe consumption at one place in this PowerPoint. But then they have, community health engagement location.
Or supervised injection sites.
Yes. But that's their new catchphrase.
That's right. Okay, and drug consumption facilities, DCF.
Community health engagement. So that's where you can inject poison into your veins if they get this thing. So, again, they could fix that Magnolia Bridge over a 20-year bonding period for the amount of money they want to spend on these heroin death sites. So, wait, how much was it? It was 14 new employees for
2.3, I believe.
2.3 million. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So, yeah, 165,000. Okay, you couldn't do the Magnolia Bridge just for that over 20 years.
And they're calling it the CHELS?
CHELS, Community Health Engagement Location.
Right. So they've shortened it so you don't really know what you're talking about anymore.
Yeah, but just so we can reclaim our language, I just want everyone listening to call it what it really is, and it's a heroin death site. So anyway, they're making that presentation right now. It's not just Seattle, but they also want a King County location somewhere in the suburbs. And they say that if they do all of this, then here's what I don't understand.
Good luck finding some place because they've all voted no, right? Most of the suburbs have all said no, they don't want to.
Yeah, Capitol Hill's the only neighborhood that says, put the death site here. So most of the suburbs have said no. I don't know why anybody would want this in their community.
I think for them, it's the choice of you have people doing it out on the street or have people potentially not dying from it and with the goal of getting them off of these drugs.
We had a record number of heroin overdoses in British Columbia and in the Vancouver area after the death site was put in up there.
If we were to take off all of the rhetoric from it and just really call it what it is it a medically supervised heroin injection center?
No, it's a heroin death site. That's when you strip off all the rhetoric and call it what it really is. That's what I do. Or that's what I professionally do. I strip away rhetoric and I get to the heart of the matter. But up in Vancouver, record number of heroin overdose.
I have been near that center. It is frightening.
It's Zombieville.
In that area.
It's Zombieville. And I've told you who's behind it, who funds the one up in Vancouver. It's George Soros. Which, by the way, I found out something incredibly disturbing about George Soros this morning. the horse that I love, Justify, that's running for the Triple Crown on Saturday?
Uh-huh.
New York Times had a blockbuster expose. It's owned 55% by a breeding farm and 25% by some Chinese conglomerate. And 15% or so, I might have the numbers wrong, some George Soros holding company owns Justify. And I love this spunky horse.
So I was going to say, do you drop your... Yes! Did you already plunk down the money?
No!
Okay, so you can't do that.
No, I either...
Ethically speaking, you cannot do that.
No, if I'm going to handicap Saturday morning, and if my handicapping suggests that Justify will win... I'm not putting any money in Soros's pocket.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so I mean, I could still gamble on the horse personally, but there's a part of me that wants it to lose because I don't want George Soros winning the Triple Crown, for crying out loud. This was New York Times. They have the story today. Check it out and then cheer your little lungs out against Justify. Unless I bet on it, I'll have it on Twitter sometime Saturday morning. And if I bet on it, then cheer for it. But hope, here's what you hope for. Because George Soros, the reason he invested in it is for the breeding rights, because that's where the money is. If I end up betting on Justify, and I'll put it on Twitter Saturday morning, I want you to cheer for Justify to win the Belmont, but then cheer just as avidly that he'll come up sterile.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't want that for the horse.
Why? Horse doesn't care.
He doesn't care. Well,
in that case, then the dog doesn't care about those
nudicles. Or as a bunch of our listeners called it, because you said you should have gotten some for your dog, scootercles.
Multiple people suggested that. It was very funny.
So funny.
Yeah, if we get artificial you know what for your dog.
I know. Poor Scooter.
Scootercles.
Deprived.
You know what? Buddy doesn't have those. And he doesn't miss him a bit. He's still full of spunk. Wait, that's the wrong word to
Never
use.
Mind.
Never mind. I mean, he's full of vim and vigor is what I was trying.
Oh, never mind.
Anyway, let me get back to these heroin death sites.
Yeah, that went off the rails a bit.
Because we had a massive drug bust yesterday here, and was it... Throughout King County and focused in...
Oh, it was all five different counties.
Five counties.
Yeah, I mean, there were hundreds, maybe I think 500 law enforcement officers involved. And this was the fourth one in as many months. But this one was the biggest. I mean, this is like a record amount.
King, Pierce, Snohomish, Skagit, and Thurston counties, 80 people arrested, 95 pounds of meth, 75 guns seized... And here they are talking to Channel 7, Cairo 7 News, about what they seized.
So this is black tar heroin down here, several pounds of it. It's about $100,000 in cash down here, guns that were seized again. And I believe this is cocaine over here, all part of the group that we took down early this morning.
And Acting Police Chief Carmen Best said it was a multi-agency operation.
This level of collaboration that you're seeing today is unprecedented.
So they make this huge bust. JTAB, FBI special agent in charge.
The level of violence committed by these individuals has been tremendous and detrimental to the South Sound community for many years. We believe that the Michael Morgan drug trafficking organization may be a significant source of the drug supply distributed by these gangs.
Okay, but I'm turning this into a big, huge, gigantic I told you so, because I've been saying that as we legalize drugs in King County and Snohomish County, which we have for small amounts, as we legalize drugs, as we say, come and inject heroin, we'll give you a roof over your head and we'll let you inject heroin in the small house we provide you. We'll give you a heroin death site where government will supervise you. Where do you think the cartels and the drug dealers are going to settle? Where are they going to go other than the Puget Sound area? We are the lowest barrier because of government tolerance of abuse and violation of drug laws. So, of course, the cartels are here. Of course, the gangs are making money selling drugs on the street. And I had that, you know, fantastic National Geographic audio from last week about how bad Seattle's gotten in that regard. So as long as we have politicians who have tried to make this the drug capital of America, of course the gangs and the cartels and the dealers are going to swamp to our area. So nice job busting them, but stop sending so many mixed messages. Next up in the Fastest 15, you want to hear the most amazing audio of the day? There was a down in
San Diego.
No. The hit and run drive. Boston.
Oh, sorry.
In Boston, there was a guy. Where's this audio? Did you bump up this audio?
It's called Hit and Run.
Oh, there it is. Okay. You're not going to believe this audio, Ursula. So a guy hits an 80-year-old man crossing the street. Mm. The guy bounces up on his hood, shatters his windshield. And the guy keeps on driving.
Oh, my goodness.
Hit and run. The 80-year-old guy dies in the hit and run. So they are able to track down the hit and run driver. And a news crew was there when they found him. His name is...
He was questioned by police and then released because he wasn't giving them a lot of info. But they had taken his clothes, so he was in this, like, disposable scrubs from the police because they had taken his clothes for evidence.
Yeah, they had his shoes and those booties on his feet. And so a news crew rolls up and they talk to, it's a bizarre name, Foshian Fitz.
And this is after he did not give information to the police. He was very, very quiet with the police.
Yeah. So. But they are going to charge him in this this hit and run. I don't know if it's going to be a felony.
Well, sure, someone died. It's going to be a felony.
You would hope so. And he admits that I can't believe that they released him after they questioned him. And like Nicole said, they had him in like the paper gown and everything because they had to take everything else as evidence. Here he is admitting that he hit and killed this 80-year-old guy. But he's not that concerned about it.
Right now, I'm not worried about nothing, man. Like I said, I'm not a stone cold killer. I didn't do nothing on purpose.
People hit and run people all the time, you see what I'm saying? So it's like, it just happened to be an unfortunate situation where I was driving. I don't take drugs. I wasn't intoxicated, but I was listening to my music. But as I'm driving too quick. So I'm driving too quick to the point where it's like I couldn't really stop, but it was green light. So as the guy was walking, the light is green, I'm driving, and I'm pressing the horn. Beep, 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 beep. It was either I was going to die and crash into a pole. So when it came down to it, man, accidents happen, man.
He couldn't care less that he just killed a guy.
But he admits to going too fast, and he had time to beep, 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 but not to stop.
And I think the other critical part is he was trying to say that he hadn't been taking drugs, but he had the music on. Yeah. And he sounds completely whacked out of his mind.
His music blaring, he's driving too fast, and he killed the guy. And he says, accidents happen. Here are witnesses.
I heard a loud bang, and I immediately looked to the right side, and I saw a person in the air.
They were checking his pulse and checking his vitals and nothing.
Guy in his 80s dies at the scene, but Foshian Fitz does not apologize.
What happened is what happened, man, and it wasn't intentionally. Accidents happen. All it was an accident.
And during this interview, there's a little girl standing beside him that's just waving at the camera, smiling, jumping up and down. It's very odd.
Yeah, it's awful is what it is. Okay, and finally, in the Fastest 15, last night, as you know, Samantha Bee horribly called the president's daughter the most vile word imaginable, the C word. Last night, TBS, which did not fire her. You know, Roseanne sends out a racist tweet, should have been fired, was fired by ABC. Then you have Samantha Bee, who says on air something equally vile in what she called Ivanka. And TBS used it as a promotional thing. They said, she's going to apologize on Wednesday night's show. So here was what sounded to me to be the lamest apology ever.
It is a word I have used on the show many times, hoping to reclaim it. This time, I used it as an insult. I crossed the line. I regret it. And I do apologize for that.
I didn't know that was a word that people were trying to reclaim. I didn't know the C word, that there was some big effort to reclaim it by people like Samantha Bee.
The problem is that many women have heard that word at the worst moments of their lives. A lot of them don't want that word reclaimed. They want it gone. and I don't blame them. I don't want to inflict more pain on them. I want this show to be challenging, and I want it to be honest, but I never intended it to hurt anyone except Ted Cruz. Many men were also offended by my use of the word. I do not care about that. I hate that this distracted from more important issues. I hate that I did something to contribute to the nightmare of 24-hour news cycles that were all white-knuckling. I should have known that a potty-mouthed insult would be inherently more interesting to them than juvenile immigration policy.
I didn't know. I wonder if Roseanne had said this. If Roseanne had gone on and said, yeah, I didn't mean to be racist, and I'm sorry that people took it that way, and I feel bad that they took it that way. I wonder if Roseanne could have kept her ABC show.
No, because she tried to apologize, and she didn't. I think that Samantha Bee's apology is lame, too. I think that's super lame. But I disagree with the, you know, equating what she said to what Roseanne said.
Yeah, and I will stand by that. I think they are equally vile. I think that racial stuff and calling women horribly misogynistic stuff, I think they're equally vile. And then she went on from there.
I would do anything to help those kids. I hate that this distracted from them. So to them, I am also sorry. And look, if you are worried about the death of civility, don't sweat it. I'm a comedian. People who hone their voices in basement bars while yelling back at drunk hecklers are definitely not paragons of civility. I am. I'm really sorry that I said that word. But you know what? Civility is just nice words. Maybe we should all worry a little bit more about the niceness of our actions.
I would love to have put a side by side if Roseanne had done the exact same apology and see if the politically correct forces in broadcast and cable television would have treated her the same way as Samantha Bee. I just think it shows an incredible double standard. That is your Fastest 50.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
Give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Okay, I'm trying to look out for taxpayers. I'm trying to stand up against government bureaucracy. I do not understand why a $50 million brand new school out in Edmonds that's ready for the kids, why the kids are not going to be allowed to move in this fall because of a bureaucratic dispute between a school district and a water district. The water district's going to talk to me. Coming up right after Ursula checks the news.
I can see you in the morning when you go to school. Don't forget your books. You know you gotta learn the golden rule.
Well, yesterday on the big show, I told you about a situation going on out in Edmonds that just sounded like an absolute failure of bureaucracy to me. They just finished building a brand new K-8 school, Madrona K-8. The kids are all set to move in this fall, but they're not going to be able to because of a water dispute. So I wanted to get to the bottom of this. Lynn Danielson is with the Olympic Water District out there and joins us here on Cairo Radio. Hey, Lynn, I appreciate you coming on with me today.
You're welcome.
Okay, so as I understand it, the school is all set for the kids to move into this fall, but they have a beef or you have a beef with them. So what's the story here?
Okay, 2016, we inadvertently found out that they were going to be using what are called deep UIC wells, which is where you take and have stormwater run into a well that's been drilled into the ground X number of feet. These
okay.
are 80 to 120 feet.
Right.
We notified the district of our concerns because this is in what's called our 10-year wellhead protection area.
Mm-hmm.
So the water in this area flows into Deer Creek, which supplies 30% of the water that we sell in our district to about 13,000 people.
All right.
So contacted the district, said we've got a problem with this, went back and forth for about 4 months, 5 months, and then in March, in order to prevent delaying the start of construction, which would have cost the school money, we entered into an agreement with the school and the city of Edmonds that said that we were not going to provide water to the site until an agreement had been reached on how they were going to monitor and test the water that goes into these wells that goes into our water.
Okay, and let me interrupt for a second here because I got to approach this. I've built a house and I had to deal with water mitigation for all of our drain pipe runoff and all of that, and we had to put in a big underground mitigation system on my property. Where was this permitted, what the school did? Because we couldn't do anything unless the county signed off on it. So was what the school did permitted?
What the school did, what the school requested be done was went through the City of Edmonds' process.
Uh-huh.
And it's my understanding that during the years of 2014 to early 2016, that they had worked with the City of Edmonds. Olympic View was never contacted.
Okay. But the City of Edmonds permitted, or was it the City of Edmonds or Snohomish County that permitted everything throughout construction?
City of Edmonds.
Okay, so the City of Edmonds permitted this, and now you guys are saying, but because you don't have the kind of mitigation system that we are demanding, that you are not going to provide water to the school?
Correct.
Okay. What are the chances of the system they have now contaminating your aquifer that provides the water for your district? What are the odds of that?
Our hydrogeologist believes that what they're doing does not meet the state rules as far as protection of the groundwater sources.
So how do you get permitted then?
Because the city can permit and say, okay, this is how you're going to deal with stormwater.
Mm-hmm.
The next permitting agency is the Department of Ecology. And this is my understanding, and I am not a stormwater person.
Uh-huh.
I do water and sewer. My understanding is what they do is they put together a plan. They go back and forth with the Department of Ecology, who then looks at what their plan is, how are they going to take care of it, the whole situation, and then the Department of Ecology does what's called authorizes the wells.
Okay, let me get back to my question. What are the odds, because I'm sure your hydrogeologists must have looked at this, what are the odds that the system that got permitted and that is in place is going to in any way contaminate your aquifer?
The odds, that I can't tell you. I can't tell you that there's a 50% chance, there's a 10% chance, there's a 20% chance.
Is there a 1% chance?
I don't have the odds numbers.
Okay.
This is
where I get into, because I try to be a government watchdog and I try to look out for the taxpayers. If you don't know what the chance, because this is, so what's going to happen now, in case people didn't listen yesterday, because you guys won't provide water to this new school, instead of moving in the fall, they have to move all these kids and families to in the Alderwood school that's been shuttered out in Linwood, about 15 minutes away. And then at some point when they reach an agreement with you guys, then they're going to have to move everybody into this new school some point in the school year, if it gets resolved. Is that all correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So what's the cost of that? The reason I ask that, Lynn, is... Because if you don't know if it's a 1%, and the reason I say this is because I've heard so much nonsense with groundwater over the years, like when they were going to try to go after septic tanks in rural King County and suggested that a leaking septic tank could go into a creek, which could contaminate Puget Sound. And it was all nonsense. And I talked to the guy with King County, and it was obvious that they were just making all of that up. If you don't know if it's a 10% chance or a 1/1000th of 1% chance, don't we have to take that into consideration if it's going to be millions of dollars to delay the opening of the school and move kids into a shuttered building and eventually move them into the new building? Doesn't that have to be part of the equation as a public servant on the part of your water district to look at cost versus benefit?
Right, and we agree with that. So we don't have the costs or any of the analysis that the school system or the school district did. So we don't know what the costs are that they're claiming. What we do know is what we're requesting. So what we're requesting, given the fact that we do a lot of water testing, is we're requesting additional testing to the tune of 8 tests a year for the first 3 years. Okay.
And the district won't do that?
Huh?
The district won't do that?
No, the district won't do that.
Okay, so but you would hook up water to the school with their existing drainage runoff system if they would agree to test the water in your system?
Well, it's testing the water that they're putting into the ground.
Well, how are we good?
We're asking,
how will we know what they're putting into the ground if nobody's moved into the school?
Well, because they've got runoff once they have the UIC wells in, and once they start flowing, we want the water tested 8 times a year for the first 3 years. We then go down in numbers on how many times a year we want them tested.
And you would hook up the school to water with that going forward?
Uh-huh. We sent them agreement on the 25th of May.
How much would that testing cost?
The testing is about $500 to $600 per test.
Okay, so if the school and the school district hasn't returned my calls yet, so that's why I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. So if the school district says, "Yeah, we'll spend $4,000 to $4,800 a year to test the water to make sure we're not screwing up you guys," you will hook them up to water right now, and the kids could move in this fall?
There's two other criteria that we're looking at, Dory. One is to extend it beyond 5 years, because that's all Department of Ecology requires, and we believe that if the water is going to be bad, it's going to be bad 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now. The next one is that we want two other monitoring wells drilled, and they're about $50,000, $60,000 each is my understanding.
Okay, but if there's no problem... Yeah. Then why would you need them to spend $100,000 taxpayer dollars if the system they have isn't creating a problem?
Because you don't know it whether or not it's creating a problem unless it fails.
So
if it quits working.
Right.
So a septic tank.
Okay.
If septic tank fails, you go in and redo it.
So the testing's not, I mean, I'm trying to mediate this thing when I get the school district. Mm-hmm. So the testing's not enough. You need testing and them to drill these two wells, and then you'd hook them up to water?
Testing wells.
Okay.
They're testing wells.
And could they do that before the school year?
Yeah. If they would agree to do this, they've only got 3 wells and 3 of the UIC wells drilled. Mm-hmm. So they still have 13 UIC wells to drill.
Okay. And I'll just peel all this back now, because I don't know that much about groundwater and wells and school runoff and all that. Do you understand the frustration of taxpayers and people like me, who's always frustrated with government, when there are two government agencies, taxpayers just spent $50 million to build a new school, and the district and the water district can't get together and get the kids moved in when the school's ready? Do you understand the tremendous frustration and cynicism that creates with the government bureaucracy in the minds of me and a lot of my listeners?
I do. I 100% agree with the frustration involved. We've tried everything we can to enter into the negotiations. We allowed pipes to be laid without this, under the belief that we would reach an agreement.
Why not?
We did not.
Why not hook them up?
We weren't aware that they were moving.
Why not hook them up and then go after them if there's a problem?
Because we laid the ground pipe with the understanding that we'd reach an agreement, and that was almost 2 years ago.
Right, but they got the permit in good faith, thinking they'd get the kids moved in the fall of 18.
They don't have them authorized by Department of Ecology. Those have not been bought off as good wells. They haven't even been drilled.
So the city of Edmonds permitted wells that are unacceptable? Is that what you're telling me?
They permitted drawings of wells that were projected to meet the criteria.
Got it. I think I got it. I don't know if I got it, but I'm going to try to get hold of the school district too, and I'm going to ask them the same tough questions here, Lynn.
That's fine.
Okay. Lynn, I appreciate you coming on and answering my questions. I really do appreciate you taking the time.
Anytime.
Okay, Lynn Danielson, she's with the Olympic Water District. I'll keep trying to get hold of Edmond Schools. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can text me at 98973, and we have much more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Messenger, and I don't have the message in front of me, but they're talking about the school water issue. And they said, you know, all this water runoff stuff, it's like global warming at a local level. It's just a way to be controlled and to run up all kinds of costs. And I've told you my story. When my wife and I built our house, we put in a sport court, a little basketball pickleball court. And before we poured the slab, it was this beautiful sandy area, driving rainstorm. There wasn't even the barest hint of a puddle because the sand was so porous. And I had a garage right next to it, and there was perf pipe around the garage. So any water that went through the sand would go into the perf pipe and into this underground tank, mitigation tank that we had to build at ridiculous expense. And the King County comes out, and they said, oh, you have to have a French drain around your sport court. I said, why? For drainage. It's sand. It drains perfect. Yeah, you got to put in a French drain. Why? It's code. Why? I don't know. It's code. I mean, the guy had no answer. No answer whatsoever. And so I had to get out a shovel and dig out this 1 foot wide, 1 foot deep, perfect, porous, beautifully draining sand, dig it out, and then put river rock in there. And then that would count as a French drain. And I said, is this going to be any better after I dig it out? I don't know. Can you explain again the reason? It's code. It's just insanity. It's way too, you know, and that's where I talk about the cost of government in all of our housing, all of our real estate prices, all of our lives. You know, if your kids buy a house, in that 30-year mortgage is probably hundreds of thousands of dollars in just excess local government. It is the most stealth tax imaginable. It's all a scam. And I said at the beginning of the show, it's like when they tried to tell rural septic tank owners, yeah, in case your tank leaks, you need an annual inspection. It was all a lie to control people and to try to get your money. I'll still try to get all the school district, and the big lead of two is next.